First of all, I really want to thank all the people, the coordinators of the DIM project, the CP of Avellino, the teachers, the students, who have done their best for the creation of this amazingly interesting tool that is the online multilingual dictionary. Really, I'm honored to be here today. My task is outlining the main features of communication and use of languages in Africa, as well as the relationships that in the continent exist between orality and writing. And believe me, this is no easy task. I will try my best to shed some light, at least on 5 selected points, which might help us grasp the underlying complexity of the whole question of language use and language policy in a continent, Africa, which is everything but a monolith. Point 1. Africa is home to 54 different countries, to hundreds of different cultures, and to thousands of different indigenous languages. According to the most recent estimates of Ethnologue, in the world, around 7,000 languages are currently spoken, and Africa, together with Southeast Asia, represents the region with the highest number of varieties. The continent hosts, in fact, more than 2,000 living languages. This means, in other words, that almost a third of the world's languages are African. As a linguist, I want to stress that the presence or absence of a writing system is not a conditio sine qua non for the identification of a variety as a language or a dialect, which is indeed a malicious belief that we usually inherit from obsolete Western school memories. In order to be defined as a language, a verbal codex must have a peculiar structure, a peculiar phonology, a peculiar morphology, a syntax, and a proper vocabulary, and it must, in a way, represent a pivot around which other slightly different but intercomprehensible variants, dialects, turn. So believe me, when we speak of 2,000 languages in Africa, we really know what we mean, and we absolutely do not confuse them with their dialects. Point 2. If you mean to focus on writing systems, it is probably worth remembering that one of the most ancient and prestigious of them, the Egyptian hieroglyph, was born in Africa, and that the Nile Valley and the Horn of Africa have been home to some other important ancient codexes. Meroitic, which is dead, but also Amharic or Ge'ez, which are still alive and used. And these are only a few examples. We don't have enough time to go through all the historical examples of African indigenous writing systems, but suffice it to say, they are about 40, and they have been developed in a time span going from the 3rd millennium before Christ to the second half of the 20th century, with the graphic system created by King Zoya of the Bamum Kingdom in Cameroon. Of course, beside these indigenous systems, both the Arab and the Latin alphabets have been used in the continent, and to be precise, it has been so for centuries. Arab, in fact, penetrated the north of Africa early in the Middle Ages, while the Latin alphabet came along with the commercial exchanges with Europeans first, and with the colonial and missionary experience later. Point 3. The supremacy of orality over written languages is for us linguists indisputable. A spoken language is indeed more of a priority than a written language, under several perspectives: anthropological, ontogenetic, and phylogenetic. Anthropologically, all languages are spoken, while not all of them are written. In fact, of the 7,000 languages spoken in the world today, only a few hundreds are written. Ontogenetically, every human being learns spontaneously to speak first, and then maybe learns to write, if taught in a school, for example. Phylogenetically, in human history, the verbal variety of language first appeared, and only about 1 million years later, the first human community invented the first writing system. This means that in this world, there are a lot of communities which, still today, produce huge amounts of knowledge, literature, memories, culture, even though they're not able to write. Indeed, writing is not a condition sine qua non. Cultures grow, and people develop and express themselves in poetry, theater, music, or storytelling, even without writing them down. Point 4. The average literacy rate in sub-Saharan African countries has risen very quickly in the last 5 years, according to the World Bank data of 2019. Nowadays, it is about 65%. However, there are still cases where illiteracy represents a tragic problem. In Chad, only 22% of the population can read and write. The best rate is registered in the Seychelles at 96%. But in general, all the other sub-Saharan countries show a literacy rate of more or less 50%. Moreover, we must consider inequalities in the real distribution of these numbers in the population. Usually, the literacy rate of women is lower than the literacy rate of men. And in rural areas, there are still many communities where the number drastically decreases to 1 or 2%. That's the case even in a country like Ethiopia, where the national rate is 52%. In addition to this, the access to libraries, or the possibility to buy books, is not obvious in many areas of the continent. This fact tells us at least two things about African literature. On the one hand, orality still represents the more widespread and used medium for literary production and expression in the continent. On the other hand, written literature, usually produced in the ex-colonial languages, is still reserved to a very small minority of the African population. African writers often write for readers outside of the continent, in order to make black voices heard by those who still today have the power to influence the economic growth of different areas of the planet. Point 5. Africa is a continent sociolinguistically characterized by multilingualism. Everyone usually speaks at least three languages: their mother tongue, the regional dominant African language, and the official language of the country. The prestige and the context of use of these different languages mirror socioeconomic factors and relegate minority languages to the lowest status, and the risk of disappearing is very high for many of them. Michael Krauss warns that, by the turn of the century, only 600 languages will remain on the face of the earth, meaning that 90% of the world's languages will have perished. Of course, in sub-Saharan Africa, this phenomenon will have a much higher impact on the local living languages than it will have in the Western world. In fact, in the Western world, almost all minority languages have nowadays at least been described, and tools have been created for their preservation. Already in 2001, according to the UNESCO Atlas of the World's Languages in Danger of Disappearing, in Africa, 97 languages were on the verge of dying. This means that already 20 years ago, 100 of the African languages had only a few dozen speakers, all of whom were very old. Today, we consider a language as highly endangered if, one, it has less than 5,000 speakers, two, it has no intergenerational transmission, three, it has no social prestige, four, its native speakers are bilingual and prefer to use the regional dominant language in their daily activities. 5. It does not respond in a creative way to new domains. In this perspective, we understand that the situation of African indigenous languages is dramatic, and that the number of endangered languages today can easily reach and surpass 400 or 500. There is no time and no way to discuss it here in depth. But as Batibo puts it, only if there is a strong political will associated with a chain of activities, such as the sensitivization of speakers, the documentation of the minority languages, their introduction in school systems, and promotion to wider public use, will language revival succeed. Unfortunately, until now, despite the true commitment of some enlightened rulers, I can mention Julius Nyerere, the first and beloved president of Tanzania, linguistic policies in sub-Saharan Africa result in many cases inefficient, and in some cases not even existent. We all know that sub-Saharan low-income countries face a huge amount of problems, ranging from health, economy, civilian and political tensions, climate change, and others. But I think that the question of good quality education and the protection of minority peoples and their languages should at least appear on their agenda as a true priority. Linguists, experts of cognition studies, and psychologists have stressed for years that pupils learn more quickly and in a better way when they are taught in their mother tongue or in a language they truly master. In Africa, most primary education is taught in the country official language, which is usually the one inherited from the colonial administration and which is completely obscure to young children. Much is still to be done, and must be done, to grant all pupils the right of learning, at least during the first 2 years of primary school, in a language they are at ease with. Only reinforcing their education systems will African governments help their population become more conscious and ready to compete on an even footing with the outside world. Thank you very much for your attention.